Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
What comes to mind when you think of the country of Syria? Do you think civil war? Do you think lack of freedoms? Do you think Russian and Iranian troops? Do you think of danger? Well, we're going to be speaking with someone on the show today who is in Syria. He is a journalist, reporter, and fixer. So what is the history of Syria? It's bordered by Lebanon to the southwest, the Mediterranean Sea to the west, Turkey to the north, Iraq to the east, Jordan to the south, and Israel to its southwest, our northeastern border. It's a country of fertile plains, high mountains, and deserts. Syria is home to diverse ethnic and religious groups, including Syrian Arabs, Greeks, Armenians, Assyrians, Kurds, Turks, etc. Its religious groups include Sunnis, Christians, Alawites, Druze, Shiites, Salafis, Yazidis. Sunni makes up the largest religious group in Syria. All this according to Wikipedia. But what is it like there now after years of a civil war with Russian, I can say maybe occupation troops in there? I don't think Russia is going to be leaving anytime soon. You have Iran in Syria. And you still have some ISIS in Syria as well. So what's it like inside this country? We're going to be speaking with Syrian journalist Mahmoud Sheikh Ibrahim. Let me tell you that he is taking a risk speaking with me because Syria is still extremely hostile to Israel. It is still dangerous to Israel's security with Iran in there and the Hezbollah. There are still skirmishes going on in Syria. It's not the safest place to live, perhaps, in certain areas there. How do they feel about Israel? How do they feel about the Jews? I'm going to be asking all of these questions on the show today. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back after the news and these messages.
I'm John O'Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind.
Every Thursday.
Today we are going to hear about the life of a journalist in Syria. What is it like being a reporter, a journalist, taking people around a country that has been war-torn for at least several years? Do you have to dodge bullets? If you have family members, are they worried about you? And how do they feel about Israel, which is on their border? We're going to be asking all these questions to our guest, Mahmoud Sheikh Ibrahim. He's speaking to us from inside Syria, and I want to apologize about the connection. You're going to be hearing some squeaks and squeals during this. There's nothing that we could do about that. We hope you'll be able to ignore that and to listen to the content of this interview. I'm very excited to be able to speak with someone inside Syria. As a Jew living in Israel, I've always been curious about what's been happening on the other side of the border when all we hear about is bombs and civil war and Russian and Iranian troops there. So what is it like? Hello, Mahmoud.
Hello. Hello, Tamar.
It's very good to have you on. I'm very excited about this. And I'd like to ask you if you can tell us where you are approximately right now. And again, I want to say that do not do anything that will put you in danger. But tell us where you are, what you're doing right now.
Yeah. Hello. I'm right now in northeast of Syria, as they call it in the media, east of Euphrates, somewhere around the area. And I'm doing my job and traveling around the area from here to here, there, and like that.
And why do you do that?
You know, I'm a journalist. I'm a fixer. So I sometimes do stories for myself or sometimes for other media, working with some international media. So we go to the front lines with the last pockets of ISIS. Sometimes we go back to other stories relating to fighting against terrorism in northeast of Syria.
Tell our listeners what exactly a fixer is.
Actually, fixer is should be local, first of all. And he should take care of the team, the, like a lot of things, transportation, accommodation, giving, finding them the right stories, and like other life, translating, contacting people. It's fixer come from fixing. The fixers fix everything for the team they are working with.
So basically, if journalists from Norway come and they want to do a story on what's going on in Syria, they will contact you and you will take them around. You will tell them where it's safe to go. Do you drive them or do you have your own car? How does that work?
You know, I work with both sides of the border. I work in Iraq, Kurdistan. I'm working in Rojava, too, in the northeast of Syria. For example, as you say, Norway, they contact me. They do so-and-so story. For me, my own style of working, I make a research about these stories and find out the possibility of these things first. And in Iraqi Kurdistan, Mosul battle, somewhere around sometime I was driving myself. But others, no, we rent a car with a driver because sometimes we drive long drives. So I try to find sometime, book them hotels here, drivers. And give them, for example, the risk assignment. We explained everything for the if they have high risk men in their HQ. Some teams they have high risk men with them themselves, and some others no. When they have no this men with them, or I take care of that issue too. So I can't say I for my teams I working with them. Maybe they some of them are listening to me right now. I take almost care of everything.
Can you get into any trouble, legal or danger, by speaking to an Israeli?
For sure. In Middle East, we are mid of, not Middle East, it's Middle Hell. So the risks around you all the time. And talking to Israeli radio, for sure, is a risk. And even the name of Israel was forbidden up to the civil war in Syria. If you say Israel, the other one will wait. What do you want to say about Israel? If you say Israel is positive way, it totally want to cause you betraying. It will cause you of anything possible. And some people being jailed for years for nothing. Just maybe they say Israel is fine or Israel is good, like simple things. So for sure, it's risk. And my job actually and involves some risk at any way. Sometimes it happened with me in like a year and a half ago during Mosul operation. Somebody called me and threatened me. And actually, he told me that when I cut your throat, then I passed the phone number to Iraqi security of Mosul. And they called him again. And I don't know what happened after that. I didn't follow. And sometime I received some letter that you are mushrik, you are that. Like this. It happened already.
So I understand that your work is very dangerous, but why invite danger? Why did you accept my invitation to speak with me?
Actually, it's fine for me. When you live among such risks and you don't take care too much about extra risks, you are already in and doesn't matter one more or less.
You're a very, very brave man, and I really appreciate you speaking with me. So, Mahmoud, when you were a little boy, did you grow up wanting to be a journalist?
Actually, I was dealing in politics since I was 14 years old. But when I say politics, it's politics not in the full meaning of the Asian democratic societies like yours and Europe and America and such things. I was involving in secret Kurdish parties, and we were holding meetings here and there, and we were distributing some statements, papers. When we talk about our newspaper was simple one, A4 papers copied on the both sides, and with hardly to be read articles, and with the black and white pictures, some pictures, not of this. But I involved in such things, and yes, maybe whoever dealing with politics have tendency toward journalism. That's maybe a natural tendency among all politicians. I wasn't a politician in the full meaning of the word, because I was, you can say, an activist who was dealing with these secret parties. And after that, when I finished university, really, I like it to be a journalist. But in Syria, it was a blockade. If you say any word wrong, out of the way, out of the path, you ended up in prison. And there was no way. In the old days, I tried when I was early 20s, I tried with some secret parties. I was writing for a while for them. And then I moved to Lebanon for a while. Also, I have written a few articles for an Iraqi opposition at that time newspaper. But after that, I stopped thinking about that. I finished my university and I started to be a teacher. But after this revolution started and I moved to Iraqi Kurdistan, and in Iraqi Kurdistan, you know, the atmosphere is good to work this job. And there is a good freedom there. And I can say it's much better than Syria. So I started to with them. Now, with many people, I was contracted to some big companies. I'm still contracted to some right now.
You said that you were in a secret party. What is that? Tell us about that.
You know, Kurdish parties in Syria since 1957, when the first Kurdish party established in Syria, they weren't allowed and they were illegally, and they were calling them betrayal separatists. So the activists who belonged to this party were all the time were exposed to be imprisoned, to be tortured, some of them being killed under torturing in Syria. So especially after 1963, after the Ba'ath Party came to power, so they did a lot of things. So a lot of Kurdish parties, we have a lot of them here, because established with one, then they shifted from each one from the other. So we have some parties, and we were working well, actually. We have popularity among people, and we were opposition, we can say civil opposition, and we were asking for democratic rights, some civil rights, some educational, cultural rights for Kurdish people in Syria, like this, and remove this, we call it Al-Hizam al-Arabi, the Arab belt, and stripping 300,000 people, Kurdish people, from their Syrian nationality. We were working for such things.
So yeah, you're a Kurd?
Yes, I'm Kurdish.
I understand. Okay, and so then you would be against Bashar Assad?
Maybe in the old days I was against, but right now, after what we have witnessed, we changed our minds, actually. Many Syrians, because we could see the worst. And this game was very well played by Bashar al-Assad and his team. He tried to make a contrast or a comparison between he himself, his regime, and the other extremists. So maybe they encouraged these extremists to come to power and to control some areas of Syria, to show that there is much worse than him and his regime. So now if I will choose between these extremist people and Bashar al-Assad, for sure I want to choose Bashar al-Assad. Mm. But here in the northeast of Syria, we have autonomous administration, democratic autonomous administration, which is a good sample for future of Syria. If the international powers support them and give them some support, it's really a good example for coexistence, people living together, I mean. And at least rehabilitation and to pass after war. Just today, I was traveling around. I could see groups, big groups of volunteers are cleaning the both sides of the road, which goes from Qamishli to Iraqi Kurdistan border. So this is something new in the Syrian community when you see people voluntarily doing such things. Mm. So autonomous administration is like a small candle in the dark or the sea of darkness, I can see right now in Syria.
So we're going to have to take a break right now, and we'll be back afterwards. We're speaking with Mahmoud Sheikh Ibrahim. He is a Kurdish man that lives in Syria. He's a journalist and fixer, and we'll be right back with more.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
We are back with our guest, Mahmoud Sheikh Ibrahim. He is a Kurdish man that lives in Syria, and he's talking to us from Syria, and he's giving us an idea of what's happening there. Before I go into more questions with you, I just wanted to ask you very quickly, your English is so good. You speak excellent English.
Where did you learn it? Yeah, thank you for that. I studied English literature and linguistics in Homs University. And I'm working with the international media, I told you, for 5 years. And I started, fortunately, with big companies, and I'm still working with one of these biggest companies around.
Hmm. Can you tell us what it was like growing up in Syria and also what you were taught about Israel and the Jewish people?
Yeah, and Jewish people, we originally, in our grandparents, obviously, we were hearing some good stuff. They were living in Kobani and around, and they were talking, they were friendly, and they were good. But in Syria, you weren't allowed to talk such things about them. If you say the Jews were good, for example, it's a crime. It's not just, it's a bad crime even. If you say Holocaust, for example, it's a crime. You should say so-called Holocaust. So a lot of things, Syria, we grow up in fear. We were afraid of everything ever you can imagine. We were afraid of jokes. We were afraid of police. We were afraid of the teachers. We were afraid to speaking our mother tongue language. And we were afraid of everything. All these things grow up with us. Even in our dreams, when we were dreaming about something out of the system, we were scaring in our dreams too.
Yeah, what were you afraid of? Situation. What would happen?
Yeah, I can say we were afraid of everything, me myself.
What would happen if you said something that you knew that the authorities, the government would not like? Would people be arrested? Would police come? Would people disappear? What were you afraid of exactly?
Yeah, actually, when I was very young, they started the campaign, the governmental campaign against the Muslim Brotherhoods. So for Muslim Brotherhood, they were just kidnapping people at night and they were never showed up again so far. So thousands and thousands disappeared, and so we grew up at such atmosphere. We weren't like the police when that normal police all over the world. We were afraid of mukhabarat, which they are secret police. So if you say any wrong word here or there, you would ended up in prison and maybe months, years, you don't know. And the Baathists were helping the Mukhabarat by writing reports to them. So if somebody don't like anybody was writing a false report, he criticized the government. And this will ended up 6 months up to a year, for example. This was the situation in the 80s and 90s, and even after that.
And is it better now after the Civil War? Is there more freedom?
Actually, they said everything is terrible. No, no more freedom, for sure. Nobody's allowed, even neither at the regime-controlled areas nor after that. Nobody's able to take, because before it was prison, right? Now it's killing. It's much worse.
Hmm. Wow. So tell us, have you been to Damascus in the last year or two?
Yeah, I was visiting Damascus regularly, and the last time I was in Damascus was 2013, mid of 2013.
So that was before the Civil War started?
Actually, no. The Civil War started in, let's say, the late 2011. The demonstration started in Syria in 2011, March 2011, and a few, three, four, five. The first months were like demonstration. After that, turned to be civil war. No, it has been like 2 years after the civil war in Damascus. Mm. That was the last time.
So when you're in Syria and there are fighters and there are bombings and there are shootings, and
yes,
everything is so unstable, how does the country run? Is there still people going to work, coming home, going to the grocery store, shopping, making food? I mean, how do things work? Is there television, and is there television news? What is it like living there during that time?
Yeah, actually, I want to talk about the area which I'm staying at right now. I'm staying in northeast of Syria. Everything is normal. Maybe when you go down to the resort, which I was there a few days ago, the resort and Baghouz, last pocket of self-proclaimed caliphate. But otherwise, everything is nice and normal. I told you there were volunteers cleaning the both sides of the road, mm-hmm. which takes like 150 kilometers long, and everything is normal. They have televisions, they have jobs, people attending their jobs in the spring. Now it's spring started, and this year we have a very beautiful spring, and you find hundreds of people are outside of the city, just sitting among these green spaces, making barbecues, dancing, singing, like that.
Hmm. And tell me, you know, throughout all of these years, what was the closest that you've ever gotten geographically to ISIS and their forces?
Actually, the closest places, maybe sometimes a few houses in Mosul. And with the beginning of Mosul, when ISIS take over Mosul, I remember it was June 15th, 16th, after 3-4 days of taking over Mosul, we were like 300 meters. After the high-risk man said, we are 300 meters away from them. But some places, yeah, we were in the old city of Mosul. They were not far away from us. They were just a few houses behind.
Hmm, wow. And with all of your taking journalists around, and journalists usually want to go to the hot spots, the places where the action is going on, which means that there's probably more danger there. Can you share with us maybe one or two stories of the most dangerous situations you've been in?
Yeah, actually, fortunately, from I started with big companies, and big companies, we have a system working on, and we have a security department, and we have a high-risk man with us. So these people, they don't go to hot space spot. Mm. But some other people who are working for like smaller companies, they want to make a show for themselves to get the very strong videos or pictures. We have been in many places like that. For example, once in north of Raqqa, into the end of 2015, a mortar fallen. It was like 20 meters away from us, and but fortunately the land was soft, so there were no rocks, no
shrapnel.
It was totally no much shrapnel, and we were already on the ground. So because of like 30 seconds before that, there was another mortar. So we got down, and when we were about to run, another one fallen. So we covered with dust, and nothing happened. And once with a lot of, you can find this picture in my Facebook. Just a few months ago, somebody else, Justin, I think, has sent that picture. She was staying behind, and we were interviewing an Iraqi commander. It was the Iraqi artillery spot. And as soon as we turned on the camera and we just started, I asked him that, can you tell us where we are we and what is the situation? And something you say, boom. I was first one on the ground because I usually put in my mind any bank I should be down. So they take me a picture. You can find that in my picture, which thankfully some colleagues have sent it to me. And I was the first one on the ground, while the other one are starting to run. And you just see the small smoke is just, she took it in the right moment. So, yeah, that was also risky. And we have been many places where they were quite close, sniping. Sometimes suicide in the next street. But for me, myself, I was usually trying to be away, not so be on the hot spot.
What does your mother think about what you do? Is she happy or is she worried all the time?
No. She is not happy. Totally not happy. Just this morning, she sent me a voice message. They are living in Erbil, by the way. And she asked me, come back home. We miss you and blah, blah, etc. And my wife and my son also, they do that.
Oh, so you're married and you have a child.
Yes.
They must be pretty unhappy as well.
Sure. They are not happy. Totally not happy. But I used to that. Maybe sometimes, yeah, risk life is sometimes it's interesting. And you feel happy with that. And sometimes interesting. I think English says risk at your risk. So I sometimes do that.
And so how long do you want to do this for?
Actually, I'm trying to find to move the next. That's why I told you I try. Sometimes I report for some other people or contribute. I'm trying to find with a company or something which I would write for their website or make stories for newspaper. You know, newspaper is declining. The era of newspaper is vanishing, I think. So maybe I'm trying to find such thing to report for them, find them stories. These areas are still not so virgin for stories, but you can find a lot of stories here, untold stories. There are a lot of untold stories here, unfortunately.
I want to ask you, as a Kurd, that the Kurds are fighting for their own independence. Where are you on this issue?
Actually, Kurds not fighting for independence. Kurds are fighting for their rights, their basic human rights. We just want to speak with our mothers in our own tongue, and we want to call our kids with our own names, Kurdish names. And this is nothing if our basic human rights. But Kurds who has been deprived for at least 100 of years since Sykes-Picot, and so far they deprived from everything.
All right, we're going to have to stop here and take a break. You're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at Israel News Talk Radio. We are speaking with Mahmoud Sheikh Ibrahim in Syria and listening to how life is over there. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
We live in the age of information, but not inspiration. If you're like me, you're looking to be inspired, to reach higher, to connect more, and to grow. Well, if you want to get warm, you need to stand close to the fire. And if you want to catch fire, you need to stand close enough to get hit by the sparks. Join me, Penina Taylor, as we walk with people who have embarked on a spiritual journey towards Torah. We'll uncover what started them on their journey and what truths they discovered along the way. So prepare to be inspired as we take a leap of faith every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Israel News Talk Radio.
We are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. We're speaking with Mahmoud Sheikh Ibrahim. He is a Kurdish man living in Syria. He is a journalist. He is a fixer. And he's talking to us a little bit about what he does and how life is in Syria. At the end of the last segment, I had asked you how it was as a Kurd to grow up under the Syrian Assad regime.
I want to give you one example. One example. I want to tell you, I was a boy, 13 years old. I was 7th grade. I asked the teacher, is it true Salahuddin is a Kurdish? And he said, come to me and say, who told you that? I dumped it. I said nothing, honestly. And he slapped me on the face and said, go back to your seat.
Who is he? Because we're not familiar with him.
Yeah, he was the teacher, because punishment in Syrian schools, it was common. It
no,
was
you asked common. You it, asked if someone was Kurdish. Who was that person?
Yes, Salahuddin. Yeah, who never did anything good for Kurdish. But I just, because I was a boy, I just asked, is it true he's Kurd? And he was very angry at that. So just take this like a sample and you can go on that.
Tell our listeners why the Syrian government, the regime there, would not allow you and, you know, the other Kurds to speak their language and to have their own Kurdish names.
You know, this area, Kurdistan, history of Kurdistan, it's this area, part of being attached to Syria. When they draw Sarkis, because draw these maps on their table, they didn't take consideration those people have been separated and blah, blah, blah. So those people, they were trying to vanish Kurd and to finish them, to take their lands. The Kurdish lands in this area, in Al Jazeera and in Afrin and occupied Afrin, that now it's occupied by Turkey. So this area is very fertile land and rich with everything. So Syrian government has started a project to bring Arab from Aleppo and Raqqa to this area in 1967. After June 5th, they stopped it for a while. They resumed it in 1974 again. And then even they taken more lands from Kurdish peasants and farmers in 1997, the last time. So they were making demographic changing, like what is going in Afrin right now. Demographic changing, ethnic cleansing. So they were. This is what happening with Kurds, and it happened everywhere in Syria, Iraq, Turkey, and Iran, because we are the owner of this land, and they don't want the owner of this land to live anymore. Either we should be either Turks, Arab, or Persian. They don't want us to stay Kurd.
You know, there have been reports in the news that Israel has been giving some assistance to the Kurds. Do you have anything to say about that?
No, that's just blackmailing from some nationalist Arab so-called journalists. It's just blackmailing because historically, Arab consider Israel is their own, their typical enemy, which they make all their troubles and issues hanging, like something you hang your troubles on, Israel for them that. So they want to make Kurds that they are part of Israel, blah, blah, etc., to just justify their hate and their hate to Kurds.
So tell us, what is the feeling for Israel and the Jews today? How has anything changed? I mean, Syria used to be a place that was taught hatred against the Jews, yet you mm-hmm. are a Kurd and you're speaking with me now. So I'm just wondering, what's the feeling?
Yeah, I think after the civil war, our Arab Spring, let's say in general, a lot of Arab and especially the educated ones, they realize that Israel is not their enemy and their regimes are their real enemies. For example, in Syria, when there was a crisis of bread or a crisis of oil, fuel or something like that, because we were in war in Israel. When there was shortness of anything here, they were saying, we are in war with Israel. So this was the justification for themselves. The Arab elite or Arab education people, this class of education, they realize this truth. For me, I'm fine. I'm not Arab. And Israel have did nothing against me. So I don't care about their hatred and their historical reasons. They are human like me, and any human being, maybe he will be good or bad. If he or she would be good to me, I want to be good to them. And they say, I don't hate somebody from principle.
Do you think that the majority of Syrians and or Kurds feel like you do?
for Arabs, I can't talk in on their behalf because I don't know, but some of them, maybe they realize that, maybe no. But for Kurds, we don't have much against Israel. No, we don't have. Even during the last decades, we don't have such thing.
Are you Muslim?
Yes.
And so in the Quran, many of us have heard here, I have not read the Quran, but I've heard about verses that say if you see a Jew behind a rock or a tree, go and kill him. What do you think when you read verses like that in the Quran?
Actually, I'm not so religious and I don't have a good religious background. I hear that. They repeat that in mosques and some people in the streets and during university, some Islamists, when we were discussing things sometime about politics and these things, they were repeating that. But I have no idea about that, honestly. And I don't take care about that, too.
Is there any message you want to leave to our audience, to the Israeli people who are listening? Anything that you'd like to say?
Yeah, I want to talk two messages, if you give me some time. I want to leave one for as a Syrian. Syrian people are like any people all over the world. If they have the right chance and the right opportunity, they will become... They are already civilized, and they will be more educated, and they want to have more democratic civil... they want their own civil community, like Israel, like Western European countries, and like these things. And the other thing, the other message is for me as a Kurd. Kurd, we just want to be like you all over, like you, whoever is listening. We want to be like you, to speak our own language, to have our own identity, to have our own rights, have our own names. We don't be much more than other. We don't want to be occupier for occupy other lands, and we don't want to be occupied too. We just want to be equal like others, like Turks, Arabs, Persians. We just want to be like that. We don't want anything more.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I want to make sure.
And one thing I want to tell you.
Yes.
We Kurds, we are lovers of life. We are not lovers of death. This fighting against ISIS, the most expensive price paid by Kurds. We lost here in Syria at least 10,000 martyrs. And in Iraqi Kurdistan, there are more than 2,000 martyrs. The handicaps here in Syria, in Rojava, are more than 5,000, the disabled men. And in Iraqi Kurdistan, around 10,000 injured people. So we paid a high price for this counter terrorism. But we are lovers of life. We like life like all of you.
The ISIS, please correct me if I'm wrong, are basically Shiite Muslims. Is that correct?
Shiite? No, they are Sunni.
They're Sunni.
ISIS are Sunni. They take caliphate on the steps of prophet, of prophecy or prophet.
And what kind of Muslim are you?
Khilafah. Yeah, actually, I'm Sunni. Yeah, but I told you, I'm not non-religious, and I have an ex-Marxist background. Yeah.
Interesting. So I just want to ask you one last question, because I'm always trying to be careful when I speak with people, not to put them in any danger. So I just want to hear you say that it's all right that I broadcast this interview, that I put it up on our website, that it goes out on the internet, and you're not afraid for your life. It should be all right?
No, it's fine. It's fine. I told you one more thing. It wasn't make too much change.
All right. Well, you tell your mother and your wife and your child.
No, I won't tell her.
I asked.
No. Yeah, believe me. This thing, I won't tell her.
All right. And if people want to contact you, Mahmoud, where can they do that?
Yeah, they can find me in the same name on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, same name.
All right. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and to talk to our listeners and tell us a little bit about Syria and about the Kurds and what you're going through and your job as well as being a fixer. Very, very interesting. Again, thank you for making this connection with me. You're a real gentleman that I contacted you on Facebook, and you don't know me from anywhere, and you agreed to do the interview, and I tip my hat to you. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
You are welcome. I want to just say that good morning to you and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you very much. And everybody, that's been Mahmoud Sheikh Ibrahim. You can contact him on Facebook. Thank you again, Mahmoud, for being with us.
You are welcome. Take care.
And there it is. We have a little peek into the life of a fixer in Syria, a Kurdish man. And I think it's been a very, very insightful interview. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to write in. You can email me, Tamar, T-A-M-A-R, at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, or you can leave a comment on the page where the show is podcasted. We'll also leave a link to Mahmoud's Facebook page if you'd like to go and say hello to him, drop him a line. Feel free to do so. You've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at Israel News Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar, I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.